the Science Magazine of the Air presents The Flying Laboratory, taken from the series entitled Exploring the Unknown, starring Lon Clark and Vicki Bola. And now for our story.
The interior of an airplane, flying over the highest mountains in the Western Hemisphere. Before the pilot's eye, fog closes down over the mountain peaks. Ice forms on the wings. The plane loses altitude, and the radar beam shows that the plane is in a pocket of the mountains. But this is the plane that will conquer weather. This is the Flying Laboratory. Science at work, pushing forward the boundary between today and tomorrow, searching for knowledge that will shape your world of the future. Dramatic stories of science and industry, exploring the unknown.
Each week on hundreds of scheduled flights, commercial airlines of the United States feed thousands of passengers through the skies. And yet, of all these flights and all these passengers, only one person in every 100 million passenger miles suffers a fatal accident. This amazing record results from the operation of airplanes that are miracles of design, by pilots who are trained to the peak of human skill, with devices which are specially constructed to maintain the highest safety. Tonight, in the fictional drama of Jimmy Greer's Flying Laboratory, you will hear the story of a plane, a pilot, and three new scientific devices. Devices which will make flying even more safe for you and all America in the air. Listen now to Act One of The Flying Laboratory.
Go on, baby, go on. Beat your pretty head off. Beat, beat.
High above the testing grounds of the Rollins Aircraft Company, a B-17 splits the air like a hooked fish. Twisting and darting, it slashes through the sky. But there's no one at the controls of the silver plane. This is a drone, a radio-operated ghost ship, piloted by the man at the beeping panel below.
Oh, honey, 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 beep to me.
In the plane sits Jimmy Greer, ace test pilot, who's been observing the automatic control of the plane.
How you doing, Jimmy?
Me? I'm reading the funnies. The automatic control's doing all the work.
On the ground, Chief Engineer Gibson operates the miniature stick and throttle on a radio panel exactly as he would in a plane. The signals control the B-17's automatic gyropilot.
Hey, Jimmy, I think we got enough dope on it for today. You ready to land?
Why ask me? I'm just a backseat driver.
Well, I'll be darned. I think you're jealous of that dummy pilot.
What does he do with his evenings? Go out with iron beam?
Oh, why don't you ask him? Okay, I'm going to land you.
Now, as Gibson maneuvers the big ship into its descent, the plane's radio-controlled servo motors, responding to the signals, set the rudder, the wing flaps, the ailerons.
900 feet, Jimmy, all's well.
Don't bother me, I'm ready.
800. 600.
Hey, what'd you say?
500.
Hey, wait a minute, the landing gear, let it down.
The landing gear is jammed. Frantically, Gibson manipulates the automatic controls.
Let it down, the wheels, let it down!
Jimmy, something's wrong, I can't.
Look out, we'll crash!
Gibson, chief engineer for the Rollins Aircraft Company, and Jack Rollins, head of the firm, sit watchfully beside Jimmy Greer's hospital bed. Fortunately, the automatic drone plane in which Jimmy had been riding as an observer had made a belly landing. The impact had knocked Jimmy unconscious. Now, as the shock wears off, he suddenly looks up at the two men.
Look, Mr. Rollins, while I was unconscious, I had a dream.
A dream? Pleasant?
Yeah. I got killed by that automatic control you're in love with.
Oh, Jimmy, what's eating you?
Hold on, Gibson. Listen, Jimmy. You're no kid. You know as well as I do that the remote control plane is here to stay. And that eventually it'll revolutionize flying. So, what's in the back of your mind?
I'd like to pull up sticks.
Yeah? Where are you going to put them down?
In the toughest stretch of flying terrain in the Western Hemisphere. The Andes.
The Andes. Mountains? Freak weather, hidden peaks 22,000 feet high. Are you crazy? By the slightest mistake, and it's suicide.
What's a choice for a guy like me? Before long, all planes will be tested by automatic pilots. You won't need me. Okay, but I still like to fly. Me personally at the controls. And if I'm going to kick off, I'd like to do that too. Me personally.
But the Andes, Jimmy.
Your mind's made up, isn't it, Jim?
You know me.
All right, Jimmy, if that's the way you want it. But I'd like to go in with you on that deal.
I don't get it.
Hold on before you say anything. For my dough, you're one of the best pilots around.
Yeah?
Now, for years, we've all worked for the same goal, safe flying.
Yeah, it's safer than driving a car today.
Now, flying is taking on a new job. Not just one country, one ocean, but the whole world. Get me?
Sure. New routes, across the North Pole, to Asia, Soviet Union, all over.
Okay, that means fog, bad ice, and landing under all conditions.
How does that cut in with me?
Well, I think you know what you're doing, Jimmy, playing around in the Andes. That's the toughest flying territory in the hemisphere. I'd like to lend you a plane equipped with the latest fog, ice, and landing experimental equipment.
Why?
Well, if the equipment stands up in the Andes, and if you hold up, then our planes can take any kind of punishment with safety. What say, Jimmy?
Stripped of the hearts and flowers stuff, it's a fair deal. Count me in.
A few weeks later, Jimmy Greer flies to La Paz, Bolivia, in a plane stripped of the normal comforts of today's airliner. In place of seats, there is flying equipment fresh out of the laboratory, a new type of de-icer, and the most advanced radar detection devices. And somewhere in the treacherous Andes Mountains on the route to Lima, Peru, they will be put to the test. The day on which Jimmy's flying laboratory is to take off, Julio Diaz, Jimmy's Bolivian assistant, comes into the office with a suspicious grin on his face.
Hey, Jimmy, you are famous in our city.
Huh? Oh, you mean that article in La Hora. American daredevil settles in La Paz. Well, how'd I know the guy was a reporter? You're standing at the bar.
Yes, and out of a clear sky, he suddenly said, Senor Greer, I can see by your twinkling eyes you are a romantic fellow. You must be a daredevil flyer. Tell me all about yourself. That's right, huh?
No, not at all. Took me for an American brush salesman.
And so you are hurt in your pride, and so you tell him all about the real Jimmy Greer.
Sure. Told him we're going to test new de-icing equipment and special radar for flying blind through the Andes. Senor, says he, you will purposely seek out ice and storm in your plane and maybe die in the process? That's right, says I. So the guy orders another drink. Next thing I know, I'm in the headlines.
Well, now there is a reporter outside from El Tiempo. Very proper newspaper.
Show me. Hasta mañana, Julio. See you later.
Not too much later, I hope.
Won't you have a seat, please? You, speak the English?
Yes. I'm a Vassar graduate. What school did you go to?
Uh-oh. Freezing weather ahead.
My name is Diana Alvarado, Mr. Greer. The article in La Hora caused a little stir this morning.
Oh, the guy who wrote that was in his cups, baby.
Mr. Greer, Bolivia is just beginning to grow air conscious. The peril of the Andes has always lain like a shadow over our airfields. And so we do not like to have American pilots come down here to kill themselves for mysterious reasons and scare our people out of the air.
Go on. I love the brand of flashing anger they teach at...
We need more men of science, not flying clowns. Men who will bring us air safety and progress. But, of course, air safety is something you care nothing about.
Hmm. Diana, did you ever take a bath?
I beg your pardon.
Okay, then. You're as safe in a commercial plane as you are in your bathtub. Chances of getting hurt today in a scheduled flight aren't much different from the chances of cracking your lovely skull in a slippery tub.
You have figures to support that?
In 1946, passenger fatalities per 100 million passenger miles ran to 1.14. Chances of going bye-bye at takeoff is 1 in 4 million. At mid-air collision, 1 in 3 million. By fire during flight, 1 in 1,300,000. At landing, 1 in 1 million. And running into a mountain, 1 in 216,000. Safe enough for you? Or don't you gamble?
Well, I do not understand, Mr. Greer. You do not sound at all like the man in the La Hora article. You are quite reasonable.
A good pilot takes advantage of every opportunity. Jimmy Greer was a good pilot on land as well as in the air. 20 minutes later, El Tiempo's beautiful reporter was cruising over La Paz with Jimmy.
Mr. Greer!
Jimmy, to you. Remember, it's up to me whether you float home from this ride.
Okay, Jimmy. Back in your office, you said you were heading into the Andes tonight on a scientific trip.
Sure, at midnight. Why?
Well, isn't this the season of the mountain storms?
That's right, baby. Makes for the toughest flying. Best time to see if a plane will stand up or fall apart.
Fall apart? Jimmy, you are joking with me.
Honest, baby, about flying, I don't kid.
Well, I know the Andes are bad, Jimmy, but why is there such great danger in your trip tonight?
Because when you test new flying aids, you test them where the chances of failure are greatest, to pick out the flaws. And if you fail over the Andes, well... You see, baby, there are no radio beams there to guide you.
Radio beams to guide you?
Sure. The day of the empty sky and the lonesome pilot's gone for good. The clouds are full of traffic, and every ship flies a marked route. Only instead of white lines like those on an auto road, you got radio beams to guide you. Signals sent out by airports.
Every pilot knows where he's to fly. And that's where he stays. But over the Andes, a long stretch without airports, you're on your own. You're driving on a road with no lights and no white lines to guide you. Blind.
Oh, now I understand. And you leave at midnight?
Yep. Hey, listen. I'll show you what I meant about radio beams.
All right.
B-243, calling approach control, calling approach control. Come in, La Paz, come in, La Paz.
Hear that?
Yes.
This guy, B-243, is coming in. He calls approach control, the air traffic cops.
Oh.
And here come the cops.
Approach control to B-243. Approach control to B-243. Come down to 2,000. Come down to 2,000.
Roger.
They knew exactly where he was. On the beam.
The flying lab comes down to a perfect landing. But as Jimmy and Diana start across the field to the main building, the public address system suddenly flares out.
Attention. Attention. All sheets. Ceiling falling. The Andes blocked out. The Andes blocked out.
Jimmy, what does that mean?
Jimmy, you heard the weather report. Yes?
Yeah, yeah. Andy's blocked out.
I'm no coward, Jimmy, but...
Let's get over to the weather station as fast as we can.
Senor Greer, those are the facts. The reports are verified by all our stations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The blockout can mean a lot of things. How bad is it really?
The Andes are completely impassable. Senor, look at the teletype. Fog, storm, freezing weather.
Oh, Jimmy!
That is bad.
I do not wish to interfere, but, Senor, you will be killed. No plane can come through.
Oh, please, Jimmy.
Look, baby, I asked for it. Now I got it. I'm pulling out at midnight. I'll see you in 4 days. Come on, Julio.
Jimmy heads for the hangar for a final last-minute checkup. But Diana stops at the nearest public telephone.
El tiempo.
City desk, hurry.
Yo, quiero, city desk.
Quiero, this is Diana. Listen close. I will not show up at the office for 4 days.
Get past the 4 days. What?
I can't tell you, but if I come back, I will have a tremendous story. Goodbye.
It's almost midnight now. A thick, impenetrable mist has settled down on the airfield outside the city of La Paz, Bolivia. In the west, where normally should be the rim of the Andes Mountains, there is only a thick, blinding fog. Beyond the fog lie the mountains, ripped and battered by the seasonal storms.
Attention! Attention! Ceiling zero. All planes grounded. All flights canceled. Attention!
All planes grounded, all flights canceled, except one. Carefully checked and overhauled, Jimmy Greer's flying laboratory is warming up. The four-man crew, which will accompany him, chat nervously beside the ship, waiting for Jimmy and his co-pilot, Julio Diaz.
Okay, guys, this is it. Hop in.
A half hour out of La Paz, the full force of the mountain wind and rain begins to strike at the flying laboratory.
Temperature is falling, Jimmy.
Good. Keep an eye out for ice. Then we'll see how that new thermal de-icer holds up.
The thermal de-icer, the first of the new scientific tools to be tested in Jimmy Greer's flying laboratory, is intended to control the dreaded glaze ice, which forms in solid sheets over the wing. The kind of ice which the ordinary expandable rubber de-icer cannot crack.
Beginning to ice up, Jimmy.
Call that ice? Oh, wait a minute.
As Julio watches through the windshield, the tentacles of ice creep up the wing and over the thermal de-icer pipes carrying hot exhaust gases from the engines. When the de-icer is turned on, the circulating hot gases will melt instead of crack the ice and send it skittering off the wing.
Right wing, okay. Ice peeling. How's the left?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know if she's working slow or not at all.
Yeah? What is it?
Radar to pilot, Alfredo talking.
Well, come on, hurry up. What is it?
It's a stowaway, sir. A woman.
A what? Jimmy, please, the left wing, the ice. We're losing altitude.
Monitor mechanic.
Yes, sir.
Get up here as fast as you can. Thermal de-icer's on the bum. Maybe the panel switch. Fast.
Right.
You're going to try to pull her up?
We're down to 23,000 feet.
And the mountains here are...
Yeah, I know. 22,000. Hold on to your hat, Julio. I'm going to see if I can lift this dead weight. Now, she won't behave, Julio.
Oh, Dios. the ice.
Take over the controls. We're down to 18,000.
18,000? Jimmy, the mountain's here.
Yeah, I know. 22,000. We've been over this routine before. I'm going back to check our radar. We're going to feel our way through. It's our only hope.
This is a test flight in an area where there are no radio beams. Like a man groping in the dark, the flying lab must now feel its way through the Andes by radar, the second scientific device being tested in Jimmy Greer's plane. Radio signals going down, forward, to all sides. If all goes well, these radar signals leave the plane, strike the obstacle, and bounce back. How long it takes the radio wave to strike an obstacle determines how close the danger may be. Julio!
Si, senor.
How's the ice?
Same as before. Maybe a little heavier.
Listen closely. Now stand by Alfredo here and shoot the radar up to you. Follow the radar dope closely. It's our only chance.
Si, senor. Go ahead.
Alfredo, ready?
Okay.
Horizontal reading.
Obstruction 8,000 feet ahead. 1,000 feet width.
Obstruction. 8,000 feet ahead. 1,000 feet wide.
South reading. 5,000 feet.
South reading. 5,000 feet. It's like walking a tightrope.
Obstruction. 8,000 feet ahead. 1,000 feet wide. A mountain peak. Another peak 5,000 feet south. And one 1,000 feet north. At 200 miles an hour, the flying lab has 27 and 2/10 seconds in which to avoid a crash.
That peak we just bounced off must have scared the ice in no action.
But, Jimmy, if it weren't for radar, we wouldn't even have known it was there.
Free of her dead weight now, with the thermal de-icer repaired, the flying lab, guided by its radar, soars easily up into the stratosphere, above the peaks, above the turbulence of the storm. The following months go quickly for Jimmy Greer and his assistants, rechecking equipment, reports for the home office, data to be gathered. It's into this hectic setting that an American visitor walks one morning.
Está usted, Señor Greer, the great Yankee flyer?
Gibson, you flat-footed duck! When did you...
Oh, such a nice day. I walked through the Andes. Hi, Jimmy.
Well, why didn't you write or something? Why, I had a band up. You got a fog in your brain.
That's why I'm down here. In 2 weeks, there'll be some crates waiting for you at the Lima Airport.
What are you talking about?
And inside them, the supersonic fog disperser.
Supersonic fog disperser?
Yeah, give me a chair and a pencil and a hunk of paper, and I'll tell you a story.
Quickly, excitedly, Chief Engineer Gibson begins to sketch in the details of the amazing new fog disperser machine that cuts holes right through the heaviest fog. Jimmy's eyes and ears follow Gibson's words and illustrations. As he sits there like an enthralled student, Jimmy has no way of knowing that 2 weeks later, over the Lima airport, his own life will again hang on the efficiency of American scientific achievement.
Flying lab to Lima. Flying lab to Lima. Coming in. Coming in. Over.
Sorry, senor. Sorry. Fog closes us down suddenly. Fog closes us down suddenly. Descend to 7,000. Descend to 7,000. Hold on to Galao fan marker. You are number 12 to land. Final clearance expected at 6:30 a.m.
6:30, an hour and a half. You can't do that. I've only got 2 hours of gas left. 11 guys to talk down before me. Or what if one of them fouls up? I'll be left in the sky, no gas, in a closed-in field.
Sorry, senor. This is an emergency. Stack up.
Stack up. Planes arranged in the sky in definite vertical intervals, 1,000 feet each above each, waiting to be guided to a landing through the fog by approach control. Planes forced to circle the skies at different air levels until it is their turn to land.
Calling approach control. Flying lab to approach control.
Come in, flying lab.
Listen, there were some big crates down there for me. Greer, big crates from the Rollins Aircraft Company.
Yes, but...
Wait. In one of them, there's a supersonic fog disperser.
A which?
A machine that cuts holes in fog. I can give you the instructions from up here on how to set it up.
But, sir,
don't interrupt me. It takes only 40 minutes to set it up. We can cut several holes in this fog, and we'll all be able to land quickly.
Senor, I am sorry,
listen,
but...
traffic cop. Check what I said to your superiors immediately, or I'll land right now, and maybe end up in the approach control tower.
Tony, all the crates are open. You have that crazy Yankee's instructions. What do we do?
He says to take that thing that looks like a loudspeaker first. He calls it the reflector.
A 10-foot loudspeaker, huh? Oh, that hombre talk too much as it is.
In the middle of the reflector goes the oscillator, a supersonic whistle.
A whistle? Look, Americano, what tune is that whistle blow to charm away the fog?
He say the whistle makes sound so high no ear can hear it. But it makes the fog particles to dance.
A rumba, maybe. And after the dance, what?
The fog particles cling together and fall like rain. And where the rain fell over, there is a hole in the fog.
Perhaps Senor Greer thinks he's born tears up there. He will cause it to rain. Huh. Well, we shall see.
And through this man-made clearing in a ceiling zero sky, the flying lab descends. The supersonic fog disperser proves its worth, as it will in the airports of tomorrow.
Diana, what the... Oh, Jimmy, you're safe. I cannot believe it. You are safe.
Yeah, but what are you doing here in Lima?
Oh, please, Jimmy, it is not important. It's very foolish.
Come on, come on. What brought you to Lima without you telling me?
Oh, please, do not laugh, Jimmy. But in Lima, there is a fortune teller I went to when I was a very little girl. And I thought perhaps she would know if...
Oh, I could have told you the answer, baby. I just didn't know how...
Know what, Jimmy?
Well, how Bolivian fathers-in-law take to test pilot sons-in-law.
As long as their intentions are scientific and honorable, Jimmy, I think it will be okay.
And now, here is Brigadier General Milton Arnold, formerly Wing Commander of the 8th Air Corps under General James Doolittle, and now Vice President of Operations and Engineering of the Air Transport Association of America. General Arnold.
A great deal of the kind of pioneering which the story you have just heard describes has gone into the know-how of the scheduled airlines of the United States in building the present far-flung aerial network and in planning for the future. The accomplishment of all-weather flying is the number one goal of the Air Transport Association and its 33 airline members. We are spending a large sum of money and devoting a great proportion of our time to the development and perfection of air navigational aids which will improve the safety, comfort, and dependability of regular airline transportation. Although the age of our industry is only a fraction of that of other modes of transportation, we are assuming a mature responsibility, for we know that air transportation can mean a practical revolution in business and in social intercourse for decades to come. We feel that once the all-weather problem is solved, there can be little competition with air transportation when all aspects are considered for carrying mails, passengers, parcel post, and cargo of all kinds. We in the airline industry continue to be inspired to greater accomplishment by the tremendous vote of confidence expressed by the American public through its constantly increasing demand for air transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, General Arnold. The Flying Laboratory has been presented by the Armed Forces Radio Service for you, the men and women of the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps. We invite you to listen again next week to the Science Magazine of the Air. And now for the time remaining, let's listen to the orchestra and the Emperor Concerto. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, a voice of information and education.